The Green String Quartet, with thanks to Aaron Copland. BBC Radio 3, time now for World Roots, and this week a report from a weekend of events that took place at London's South Bank last month. Here's Lucy Duran.
It's a rather spring-like day in London, and I'm in front of the South Bank Centre, where for 3 days running, women will be strutting their stuff at a freshly launched Women of the World Festival, or WOW. The festival was set up by the artistic director of the South Bank Centre, Jude Kelly. Her aim is to celebrate and recognise the achievements of women across a number of different fields, from politics to art. There are certainly plenty of female artists from around the world that I've come across during my career that would fit that bill. But today, I'm at a concert showcasing two iconic styles. Fado, the gorgeous blues of Portugal, represented in this concert by the British-based, young, up-and-coming fadista Claudia Aurora. And Sana, the ancient Arab Andalus tradition, featuring the Algerian singer Nassima, who's making her UK debut. It's a gig promising to be drenched in emotion and drama, a real treat for lovers of that purest of instruments, the female voice.
Ver-te longe no horizonte meu ar, tirei ao mar um desejo ao ver-te longe no horizonte pude chegar no horizonte. Horizonte Yeah.
Claudia Aurora here at the Queen Elizabeth Hall in London as part of the Women of the World Festival 2011, or WOW as it's also known. And I'm backstage now with Claudia at the Queen Elizabeth Hall, and I'm hoping that you're going to tell us what it is about Fado, Claudia, that attracted you.
My connection with Fado, I think it's a genetical one. It's quite a genetical talent or potential, because it's my grandmother, Aurora, was a fado singer while she was a teenager and in her early 20s, until she got married with my granddad and decided to be devoted to the children and became a professional chef. But she's known in a family, runs, that Aurora was a great fado singer. But back then it was very difficult to pursue a musical career, especially under the fascism, and all this was very, very difficult in Portugal. Especially even more if you're a woman, because you were seen women, and Fado was seen a bit as mistressy and like very kind of bohemian. So you have to be very brave to sing Fado, really. But my dad was a singer as well, and an actor, amateur. And my uncle as well is a singer. He still is. He's a farmer, but he sings really well. So I think he's in a family. But with me was when I came to England 8 years ago, moved to Bristol. I was started working as a dance teacher, daytime job, which I still do, and as a singer, professional singer of bossa nova and MPB and samba. And then I got involved in like different projects of Afro-Cuban music. I was singing and dancing with like 8 different projects. And then one day I saw Fado came and knocked on my door. I was listening to Fado daily and practicing Fado at home and singing to my friends. And then a friend of mine came and asked me to do a Fado performance out of the blue. He said, well, come on, come and do this. So I felt that Fado was calling me to do it. So I tried. I went in June 2006. It was my first performance. And the house was full, absolutely packed. And I had a very simple black dress, really simple, really humble. Went in and delivered the performance. And then I felt like I found my expression.
In other words, Claudia, you discovered Fado outside Portugal. You had to come to the UK to discover your Portuguese musical roots.
Exactly. I feel with Fado, you have to require some maturity and experience and life, and for you to fully deliver that feeling. Because Fado is fate, destiny, pain. And we Portuguese, we're not sad people, but we admire sadness. For us, sadness is beauty as well. There is beauty in sadness. Fado represents life and the ups and downs, and it relates to everybody in one way or another, I think.
Não se atrave a minha boca, que eu não a deixo adver. Mãe, não se atrave a minha boca, que eu não a deixo adver. A dizer que eu ando louca, ai que ando louca por te ver. A dizer que eu ando louca, ai que ando louca por te ver. Não se atreve a minha boca ao grito que eu quero dar. Ai, não se atreve a minha boca. cego meu coração. Ai, a minha boca não se atreve, não cego meu coração. E não diz o que não deve, a minha expiação. E não diz o que não deve, vai a minha expiação. Minha boca não se atreve a dizer o que lhe digo. Ai, a minha boca não se atreve a dizer o que lhe digo. Se ela se atrever em breve, vais saber que eu sonhei contigo. Se ela se atrever em breve, vais saber que eu sonhei contigo. À minha boca atrevida, já me disseste a mim. Ai, minha boca atrevida, já me disseste a mim. E enchaste a minha vida com esse sonho boé. E enchaste a minha vida com esse sonho boé.
That was Claudia Aurora, the Fadista, performing Não se atreve a minha boca at WOW, the Women of the World Festival, here at the South Bank in London. I'm Lucy Duran, and you're listening to World Roots on BBC Radio 3. And for more information on all the music in the programme, you can head to the World Music pages of the Radio 3 website. Next on stage is an Algerian singer who specialises in the Arab-Andalus tradition of North Africa. Here she is, making her debut in the UK with an Arab-Andalusian suite in the Sika mode. This is Nasima.
Oh,
Well, I'm now backstage in the Queen Elizabeth Hall with the singer Nasima. She's from Algeria and she specializes in the Arab Andalus tradition of North Africa. So, Nasima, it's your first time here in the UK. This is your debut and we're very delighted to have you here. Tell me about the Arab Andalus tradition that you specialize in.
J'ai toujours chanté depuis toute petite avec ma mère, avec ma grand-mère.
I started singing when I was very young with my mother and my grandmother, who were both exponents of this pure Arab Andalusian tradition. That was in Blida, in Algeria, where I was born. So tonight, I pay tribute to them and all the women in the world.
Ma mère, ma grand-mère m'ont appris à chanter.
My mother and grandmother taught me this very ancient tradition, which comes from Moorish Spain and dates back to 1492, around the fall of Granada. The music was sung by refugees from El Andalus, who escaped to North Africa, including Algeria. My town was actually founded in 1520 by refugees like these. And these refugees brought with them all the arts and crafts, such as metalwork, gardening, farming, irrigation systems, which, by the way, for that era were very developed, and, of course, Arab Andalus music and poetry.
Et bien sûr, la musique arabo-andalouse et la poésie arabo-andalouse.
I was fortunate enough to have been taught when I was 7 years old by two great masters, Dahmani Ben Ashour and Sadah Bojewi. I was taught in this purest of traditions at the Musique Conservatoire, and my entire life has been about singing and reviving this ancient tradition, as well as other popular music derivatives such as shabi. I have dedicated 30 years of my life to this music.
And what's special about the Algerian Arab Andalusian tradition? Because the Arab Andalus tradition is all over North Africa. What is special about the Algerian version of that?
Une chose est sûre, c'est que cette musique arabo-andalouse est venue d'Andalousie.
One thing is certain, this music came from Andalusia, and from there on, it traveled widely. It went to the Maghreb, and even as far as Turkey. And the music developed local particularities, developed by the indigenous populations. So in Algeria, for example, we have three different schools, and they all differ stylistically speaking. But the core structure is the same, and the rules that govern Arab Andalus music are the same everywhere. And the lyrical content, the poetry, is the same too. So when this music came from Andalusia, she took on a North African colour and absorbed the language and dialect of the Maghreb. Those African sounds certainly enriched this existing tradition.
Ils ont apporté leur couleur.
And you say your town where you're from, Blida, was founded by Andalusian refugees from the fall of Granada. So do you feel as though your heritage, your own identity is Andalusian, Arabo-Andalusian?
Perhaps. C'est possible que je sois une
yes, perhaps. Yes, it is possible that I am one of those refugees. And I have learned this from my mother and my grandmother, who always bragged about their Andalus heritage. I learned a lot from her. For me, she constituted almost like a school. You know, she taught me the Arab Andalus poetry by reciting to me those beautiful texts. She spoke about beauty and nature. And we often sang at family reunions. And it was always Arab Andalus music we would sing.
So what is... I mean, you say that your mother and your grandmother were your teachers. So how important, what is the role of women in this music then, since we're part of a woman's festival here?
Très bien, ça c'est une très très bonne question, parce que cette musique, avant, elle était réservée.
That's a great question. A long time ago, this tradition was reserved to men only. It's a scholarly in classical music. And ever since that fall of Granada, there have not been any professional women singers until I arrived on the scene. I was a pioneer, and my masters appreciated this. I was the first woman to sing the classical suites. They're called the Nuba. You see, those classical suites can last up to 1 hour, and to pull off a classical piece that long, you have to be trained in all the different modes and have to know all the little secrets of this art. It was taught to me by great masters, Dahmani ben Ashour and Sadah Bejawi.
Tels que Dahman ben Ashour, Sadak Bejawi et autres grands maîtres.
And I am the fruit of their work.
But there's a contradiction here, because you're saying that you learnt this music at home with your mother and your grandmother, two women. And then you're saying that your teachers were all men.
Non, pas une contradiction. J'ai appris quand je dis
That's
ma mère
not
et
a contradiction.
Ma mère et ma grand-mère n'avaient pas fait les écoles.
My mother and grandmother had not been to a music school. They sang at home, as was the tradition back then. But I also learned from great masters at the conservatoire, so that's different, you see. My mother would transmit me the tradition, which was sung at festivities and ceremonies and little parties that my mother put on, like women-only parties. And I listened carefully as a little girl to these songs, which often she improvised around at home. But in addition, I went to learn them in an academic environment too, at a school. So there is no contradiction, rest assured.
Il n'y a pas de contradiction.
Thank you, Nassima.
Thank you. Merci. Allah, 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 Allah.
Shukran. Ya ummi, oh my mother. Ya ummi, ya ummi, ya ummi. Ismik dayman fi fummi. Ya ummi, ya ummi, ya ummi. Ismik dayman fi fummi. نشرب حليبك نشرب حليبك اللي يجري في
Des racines et des champs. Sahara.
نطلب الله رب الكون يحفظكم الحانون
قولوا شهلة العيالي لوف بي لوف بي لوف
Oh, قلبي كيبغي أزين اللي فيه قلبي كيبغي أي 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 بنت بلادي
voice of Nassima with music from Algeria, closing this concert here at the Queen Elizabeth Hall on the South Bank in London. That's all for today on World Roots. You can find details of all the music on the BBC Radio 3 website, and do join me next Saturday at 3 p.m. when I'll be discussing new world music releases with Monica Vasconcelos and David Hutchum. And in the studio, we'll hear from a young Brazilian who's just released his debut album, the singer, songwriter, and bossa nova artist, Raf Vilar.
That was Lucy Duran. World Roots was produced this week by Ellen Frisby.
The Democratic Party at one point made an inquiry if I would be interested in running for the Senate.
The actor Martin Sheen chooses his Desert Island Discs.
You know, I'm deeply flattered, but I'm not qualified, and I had to make that very clear from the beginning. I'm an actor.
Discussing his son, Charlie Sheen.
Charlie is dealing with the most profound problems.
And overcoming his own demons.
Had you been a very committed drinker?
I'm in the program, you know, since the mid-80s, really.
Desert Island Discs returns to BBC Radio 4. Tomorrow morning at 11:15.
Well, this is BBC Radio 3. It's 4 o'clock and time for Jazz Library with Alan Shipton, who's out and about this week.
Welcome to this very special Jazz Library broadcast from the Gateshead International Jazz Festival at The Sage in Gateshead. Please give a very warm welcome to my extremely special guest, the saxophonist Joe Lovano.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Well, Joe, you've got such an extraordinarily broad catalogue of recordings, it's very difficult to know where to start. So I thought we might dive in somewhere near the middle with the album called Landmarks.
Well, Landmarks was my first session for Blue Note Records. Right at that time, we played in Japan, and in a way, the Japanese part of Blue Note were producing a lot of recordings. And Mr. Namegato, who was working with Bruce Lundvall and Michael Kuskuna, produced my first session that Blue Note put out. I had been recording as a leader probably 5 years or so prior to this date for Blue Note, and Landmarks turned out to be the first of an amazing series of records. And my newest release, Bird Songs, was my 22nd record.
All for the same label?
For Blue Note, yes, yeah, since that first session.
Well, we'll follow that odyssey through as the program develops, but before we actually get into the first track, which is called Dig This, we might just talk a little about the band, because there's a lovely synergy between you and John Abercrombie on this, and also between Mark Johnson and Bill Stewart, so you've got a really nice band tucked around.
Oh yeah,
you.
Well, you know, all of my recordings have been about relationships with people that I've played with and developed ideas and music with through the years. John Abercrombie and I had been playing together in a lot of different groups as leaders. I played a bunch of gigs with John and his music, and he was playing with me and my music. Mark was on bass on some of that. So John and I had a moment there where we were working a lot together, you know, and the whole group, actually, Kenny Werner on piano, Kenny and I first met in the early 70s, and we had been playing and developing a lot of music together, and he's featured on two of my other releases on Soul Note prior to this, Landmarks. Mark Johnson and I were on the Woody Herman Band together in the late 70s, prior to him joining Bill Evans' trio. And through the years, we had played a lot together. Bill Stewart was going to William Patterson College, where I was on the faculty between 83 and 91 or so. So when he graduated from William Patterson, it was right around this time, and he joined my group. That's when John Scofield first heard Bill play. Subsequently, that led to him playing in a lot of groups with John, and John and I together, actually. So that quintet was really about relationships and the way we were playing together. And then I wrote all the music for the session for those people and how we played together. And we broke down into different forms within that quintet.
Well, let's just hear a little bit of the track called Dig This. Part of Dig This from the album Landmarks on Blue Note from 1990. Mm. Well, Joe, let's move forward just 1 year. And I think if it wasn't the next, it was the next but one Blue Note album was called From the Soul, which has Michele Petrucciani on piano. Now, I think Michele had worked with Charles Lloyd before this, hadn't he?
He started playing with Charles, in the early 80s. And then he moved to New York, and he was around New York a lot throughout the 80s and was actually one of the first artist that Bruce Lundvall signed to Blue Note Records around 1985 or so, something like that. I was guesting with his trio a lot, and Michele and I had a real special relationship. He was born December 28th, 1962, and I was December 29th, 1952. So we had these joint birthday parties a few times that were very memorable. And he was a brilliant poetic musician, man, that was really someone special in my life.
Now, you talked about the fact that you worked with his trio, but for this album, you assembled a really rather special band by adding Dave Holland to the mix and also bringing on drums Ed Blackwell.
Oh, yeah. This record was from around 1991 or so, I think.
Yeah. Actually, I think it was on his birthday, the 28th of December.
That was the session I had booked on his birthday and my birthday, and we did the whole date almost in real time on the 28th. But Blackwell and I have been playing together for about two or so years, from 1988-89. And one of my Enger records was called Sounds of Joy that featured Anthony Cox on bass and the amazing Ed Blackwell on drums. And during that period, we were working a lot together and doing some gigs. And I had also played a little with Dave Holland. But Dave and Blackwell had a real special relationship and played together a lot. Carl Berger and others. And that magic between them was solidified and really documented prior to this date, you know. And Michelle had never really played with Blackwell before. On the Session was the first time they played together.
Well, it's one of your tunes that we're going to hear. I don't know if this was written specially for the session, but Lines and Spaces seems to be very appropriate.
It was. It was written for the date, you know. And I tried to really focus on putting material together that let everyone be free to contribute their ideas within the forms and the structures of the music.
Lines and Spaces from the album From the Soul on Blue Note. Joe Lovano, my guest here on Jazz Library at the Gateshead International Jazz Festival, with Michelle Petrucciani, piano, Dave Holland, bass, and Ed Blackwell, drums. That was recorded on the 28th of December, 1991. Joe, one of the things you mentioned a minute ago was that you played from time to time with people in duo, and I thought we ought to hear two different special things on the next track. It's a duo with Gonzalo Rubalcaba, whose name I can never pronounce properly.
Mm-hmm. That was good.
And it's from the album Flying Colours, but I thought it would be a chance to hear you playing the alto clarinet, because not that common an instrument.
Mm-hmm. It's a horn that I started to play probably sometime in the mid-80s, and a close friend, Bob Belden, who was a great saxophone player, had this alto clarinet. He wasn't playing it, and I ended up getting it from him. And it's a voice, I think, that for me really works. I could play with drummers and ensembles and speak very clearly, and it projects in a really nice way. It's between a clarinet and a bass clarinet. And when you play live with this horn, I feel real comfortable playing with folks, you know. It has a special color.